modernization is one of those topics I think a lot of people aspire to do, but the devil is always in the details and also in the culture. The hardest part has been around change of internal processes, changing of the way that we actually operate and do work, and then changing the culture.
Welcome to the Hackett Group's Business Acceleration Podcast. Each episode shares our latest research, benchmarks, and best practices on world-class performance. Week after week, you'll hear from top experts on how to avoid obstacles, manage detours, and celebrate milestones on the journey to world-class performance.
I'm Jay Ruffin, your host for today's podcast, and my guest today is Ed Anderson, CIO at the International Monetary Fund. I'll be guiding the discussion today, providing context as needed. With that, let's jump in. Ed, thanks for joining.
No, my pleasure, Jay. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we'll talk specifically in a couple of categories, but kind of meander as needed. But I wanted to get your thoughts on kind of modernizing, because I know that that's been going on within the IMF, and talk a little bit about the pandemic and what's been happening within the IMF given the pandemic. So I guess to start off, one thing I wanted to get your thoughts on is the IMF. I know you're modernizing, like I said. I'm wondering if you're also looking at integrating services and or ways to deliver in a more streamlined, efficient manner to some of the internal staff and clients within the IMF. Is that going on as well?
Well, Jay, it's interesting. Modernization is one of those topics I think, a lot of people aspire to do, but the devil is always in the details and also in the culture. But we're modernizing a number of internal functions right now: HR, economic systems, knowledge management, capacity development, and collaboration. And we're looking at doing those both as effectively and as efficiently as we can do individually, but also integrating them so that access to information, accuracy of information, ease of use, and obviously security and risk management are effectively managed as well. So we're looking at using a lot of different tools and technologies, but really the hardest part has been around change of internal processes, changing of the way that we actually operate and do work, and then changing the culture of, when you spend 75% of your time finding data and then 25% of your time using it, how do you change that paradigm so that information is easy to find, but then the utilization of that information or the knowledge around that information becomes the predominant time consumer? So how do you change people into being knowledge workers? And so that means the technology and the tools have to integrate well, have to play nicely, have to work effectively. Your user design has to work well. The way that the tools are accessed has to be mobile, secure, anywhere, anytime. And then, you have to have, at least one single source of truth, for the data. So all of those things have to come together to be effective for our modernization to come through. But like I said, one of the hardest ones is the culture, making the culture work. And
that's interesting.
And that's a journey that will go on long, long after the systems are in place.
So I think the cultural change, I can see that definitely being a huge impact and lift, so to speak. Coming into it, did you have a specific goal or target you're trying to hit from a modernization perspective?
Yeah, what we did is for each of the modernization programs, and we had five of them, each one had their own cost-benefit analysis, each one had their own goals and objectives, each one had their own predefined endpoints. We wanted to, of where we wanted to be and what outcomes we wanted. So each one of them, as I said, individually kind of really creates a lot of value, but then together integrated, that's the greatest value. And we're still getting our hands around, what that end picture looks like from a cost-benefit analysis perspective, but we know what the end in mind looks like from a usability perspective, from, as I said, accuracy of information, accessibility, and security. But, you know, how do we tell that story of all five integrated and working together in a financial way? We're still working through. But each one of them has, like I said, each individual project with a CBA, risk analysis, and with a set of goals and objectives.
So one of the things that I find also difficult is defining and measuring value for these types of efforts. Is that something that you, it seems like you're at the beginning of the process. Is that something that you're kind of getting a grips around? You know, how do we kind of define and articulate and make sure that the business really understands the value associated with what they're getting?
Yeah. And, you know, the value, you know, we can always do the cost benefit analysis, the return on investment, internal rate of return. We can always do those measures. It's some of the intangibles that are harder to measure that, you know, we still are trying to work to get our hands around. Like I said, culture change for one. How do you know when you've changed the culture of people becoming knowledge workers? How do you know when you've changed the culture of people using the technology and the information in a mobile way, you know, anytime, anywhere, in an accurate way? So some of the less tangible measures we're still working through, but the tangible ones, I think we've got our hands around because we want to make sure that we're spending a dollar to get $10 and not a dollar to get 50 cents. So that's, you know, that's an ongoing quest for the, like I said, more of the intangible. But for the tangible things, I think we've got our hands around it pretty well.
That's great. Let me flip it a bit and ask about something that's another kind of hot topic today, cryptocurrency. Has, from an IMF perspective, I know that there would be potentially some impacts. How is the IMF in its kind of delivery of the strategy and mission? What's the expectation from an IT perspective in terms of how IT is going to either help enabling the strategy or kind of play to that mission that the IMF has regarding either cryptocurrency or blockchain?
Yeah, that's a great question, because when you think about fintech and digital currency, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and even blockchain and other things along that line, you would think that IT doesn't have a role in that, right? It's primarily policy. It's primarily, you know, economic impact or macroeconomic impact. But at the IMF, the IT group really does have a significant role in it. We started something called the Digital Advisory Unit when the IMF was pursuing and making, not necessarily pursuing, but when we were making fintech part of our core agenda, we found that we were hiring external consultants to come in and tell us about the various things that we've described, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, you know, whatever it may be, blockchain. And yet we had those skills internally in IT within the IMF. So we created something called the Digital Advisory Unit. And what they were is internal consultants to the various departments that had a role in the fintech agenda. And so what we did is we provide advice, consulting, events, and thought leadership in all of those areas to the internal departments so that we can go and meet with our members who are our external stakeholders, providing an IT component or the IT perspective in those discussions. So we like to say we're the tech in fintech, and we've kind of evolved that to be member tech and gov tech and a bunch of other techs. But we provide the tech in those discussions, and we've written a number of papers around it. We've done training sessions. As I said, we've met with our members, and IT really does play a significant role in the fintech agenda and the digital currency agenda of the IMF. So it's something that we're intimately involved with, and that we'll continue to be involved with as the agenda gets bigger and bigger.
So in essence, you're helping and enabling other groups with kind of the advisory service. So it also means that you're supporting the strategy. Are you helping develop the strategy as it relates to fintech?
Oh, absolutely. Because like I said, we're the tech in fintech. So we partner with other departments that work on maybe, they're working on monetary policy or capital policy or tax policy related to fintech, and where we're looking at the actual technology, including the risk. right? So digital risk is a big part of it. And so we're working on digital risk, cyber risk, and also, as I said, assisting with the policy development. Now, ITD doesn't, you know, my IT department doesn't lead the policy part of it, but we're a core part of the team that that works through the policy. So it's a team effort, and I think it's a good approach for us.
Is fintech the only area that you're providing those types of advisory services, or are there, other areas that you're doing that type of advisory consulting kind of internal business from an IT perspective?
No, not just fintech. We're also looking at cybersecurity because that's becoming a growing concern. You know, what's the safety and security and resiliency of the cloud, right? Because a lot of financial institutions are running workloads in the cloud now. You know, how does that work if you have a failure? How, you know, what's the impact if somebody, you know, hacks your central bank? So we're also working on the risk and cyber aspects. We're also looking at blockchain. We're also looking at other digital currencies and digital money. So we're looking at a number of other areas as well. And like I said, we're providing the technical component, the IT component in those discussions. But, you know, as broad as the discussions are in the IMF, you know, if there's a technology component of it, we're engaged in working in that regard. And what we're finding is it's growing. It's growing. You know, 3 years ago, it was a discussion about what is it, right? What is cryptocurrency? What's digital currency? What is fintech? What is member tech? What is cyber risk? Now we're getting into more specifics. What are the implications for a specific country or a specific central bank or a specific group of countries? And really beginning to meet the growing demand that our membership is requesting and asking.
Do you think, I'm kind of reflecting on something you was talking about with regards to change and the big cultural uplift. I think you know, one of the tacks that you may have adopted, it sounds like, is using this type of advisory service to help facilitate a comfort level or certain technologies to kind of enable the usage of them. Is that true, or is, because it sounds like that might be part of an overarching change strategy?
No, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, for most non-technologists, and remember, the IMF is made up of primarily economists, you know, understanding cloud and cybersecurity and workloads and Kubernetes and containers and all those types of technologies aren't something that they deal with every day. So providing education, providing a conversation, providing input, providing validation is something that's highly valued because it's just a skill set that, you know, an economist or someone working in the policy area isn't going to have a clear understanding of. So we partner, we call it two in a box, we partner with them, and we provide the tech part of it, they provide the policy parts of it, and the idea is to deliver as much value as we can to our membership.
That's great. Let me switch a bit and talk a little bit about the pandemic and get your thoughts on a few things I wanted to ask. One is, you know, given what's happened over the last few months, how has that impacted the IMF in terms of, you know, policies, technology, use of technology, processes? What's been the impact on the from your perspective on the IMF?
Yeah, like a lot of organizations, you know, we were, we felt it was safe to leave our building back in, a year ago, March, as the pandemic grew. And so we very quickly had to pivot to a work from home strategy. Now, we had always had people who were traveling, meeting our members in their countries and working abroad. And we have offices in other countries that we work, but we've never had, you know, 100% of the workforce, you know, leave the office and begin to work differently. So the things we had to do technically, we had to enhance our collaboration tools, we had to enhance our web meeting tools, and we had to make sure that the platforms and the processes worked effectively, but also worked securely. We also had to increase our help desk because, you know, we were using a set of tools that, you know, not everyone had used. You know, when you can go to a meeting as opposed to have a WebEx, not everyone knew how to initiate a web conference and things like that. So enhancing our help desk to making sure that worked, but also enhancing the infrastructure. Better networking monitoring, and of course, better cybersecurity. Because now that everyone's working at home, we know that the hackers and people who want to get us with phishing attacks and other things. You know, now they know that people are on online 10, 12 hours a day sitting in their living rooms, and that offer to win a new Cadillac by just clicking on a link and you're the instant winner begins to get more and more enticing. So we had to work, like I said, tools. We had to work processes. We had to work cybersecurity. We had to work support. But we also had to work culture. Because, you know, we have people who their membership, the countries that they support may be a six-hour or an eight-hour time difference. So if you're used to actually being on site in that country, now how do I adapt now that I'm in the United States working with somebody who's got a six-hour time difference? Do I wake up at my normal time, start working a normal day, or wake up in the middle of the night and get on their schedule, my time schedule? So I work my time schedule and their time schedule too? And, you know, how do I make this work? And so I think that was something that we had to get through and that we came through very effectively. But quite honestly, the thing we're dealing with right now is fatigue. You know, it's been a year and a half or a year and almost a half of people working, on collaboration tools and web conferencing tools and sitting in their living rooms or kitchens and offices. And working, like I said, 10, 12 hours a day, looking at people in, what is it, one dimension? And so, you know, we're beginning to open our office up again and beginning to come back to the office and trying to, you know, make that conversion smooth, from sitting in the office all day or sitting at home all day back to the office. You know, we're trying to make that a smooth conversion, but so far it's been good. The technology's held up. Like I said, we've done really well. It's just fatigue that we're battling like so many other organizations are right now.
Do you think some of that will kind of the working from home will stick? You know, a lot of companies are kind of rethinking the whole idea of telecommuting and how they interact from a collaboration perspective and otherwise, even with some of the applications. But is that, do you think, going to change the way the IMF actually works going forward, given kind of what's happened from a COVID perspective?
Well, you know, we're going to adopt a hybrid model, which means that, you know, we don't envision coming back to the office 100%, but that there'll be people who come to the office maybe 2 or 3 days a week, or people who come to the office, maybe a little bit less than that or a little bit more than that. But the idea of having 100% back in the office, everyone sitting in their cubicles and offices and having, in face-to-face meetings 100% of the time, I think we've already let that go and realized that we can work productively and effectively from home. That when you think about issues of, you know, child care and elder care and just mental health and all the other things that go with having a more flexible workplace, is best to adopt. So we're going to do a hybrid model, and like I said, I think it'll be effective for us going forward, because people have gotten used to working differently. And, to go back to the 100% brick and mortar, I don't think we have any reason to do that anymore. I think we can be effective in a hybrid model as well. And that's what we're going to adopt.
One question, you brought up fatigue. And I know that a lot of folks are getting tired of looking at this, you know, their laptops with the images of, you know, 5 or 6 people that they used to sit in the office next to. That fatigue you're talking with, is there a strategy in place for kind of how to deal with that? You know, example, some folks may adopt the strategy of, no Zoom or emails or calls after, say, 12 p.m. on Wednesdays, or so that folks can kind of disconnect in a way. Is that something that you guys are considering, or how are you kind of looking at fighting some of that fatigue?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, because we started by shortening every meeting. So instead of a half an hour meeting, it'd be a 25-minute meeting. Instead of an hour meeting, it'd be a 50-minute meeting, which gives, you know, people a 5-minute or a 10-minute transition time, or a time to decompress from the meeting. You know, we also have encouraged everyone, you know, block off lunch, block off, you know, mental health time if you need it. But I think more specifically and more importantly is, we've said, you know, don't be ashamed to say you need help. We're not meant to sit and look at a screen 10 hours a day, 5 days a week or 6 days a week. And if you need help, if you need someone to talk to, if you need some counseling, if you need to take a day off, please, you know, reach out to someone and do it. because, you know, our assets are our people. And as committed as people are, you know, they want to keep pushing through and they want to work and they want to get things done and they want to serve their membership, our membership. But the reality is, you know, it all starts with us as individuals. So when you get tired, you need to make sure you take time off. If you get fatigued, you need to make sure that you're blocking out appropriate times to take off. If you get to a point where you can't go on or you need someone to talk to, you know, don't be embarrassed by it, but go ahead and, you know, step up and say, you know, I need to take some time or I need to speak with someone. So we've set up, you know, phone call lists and we've set up a care network, things that, you know, people can talk to. We have peers for a respectable workplace that we've put in place, which is just a peer that you can talk to say, I've got something going on in my life or I've got something going on in my family and I just want to talk to someone. So creating the mechanisms to meet people where they are was, I think, a key part of what we've done in the work from home initiative.
That's great. Last couple questions, and I'm kind of off the working from home theme. You know, there are two things that a lot of CIOs have had to deal with as we dealt through the pandemic and kind of getting their staff up and running. One was definitely around, cybersecurity and enabling folks to access applications remotely and dealing with single sign-on and the likes. The other was bandwidth, right? So your whole network configuration changes when you're going from, you know, folks working in the central office to folks kind of being distributed and working remotely. That's obviously changing as folks kind of come back into the office. Has that been kind of a hurdle? Because I'm thinking about the whole modernization effort and kind of how you've had to do some integrating. Has that been a hurdle? Have you leveraged that to kind of do stuff that's a little bit more dynamic in nature?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, as I said, you know, earlier, we've had a workforce that has traveled a fair amount. You know, we've got members, 190 member countries. And so we've had staff that are always, you know, traveling or going and doing meetings and things like that. So we've always had this mobile component to everything that we've done. And then with the modernization projects, we said, you know, it's kind of cloud first, mobile, secure, and accessible as design principles. So we were building them with the mobility in mind. So when the pandemic came, you know, we were already positioned with the fundamentals, with the basics of mobility, and we're already building our applications, the new applications in that regard. So it was really an enhancement and an expansion of what we were doing. And your point about networking was key because, you know, we had planned on having maybe 1,000 people out of the office or 1,500 at a time. And we had sized and designed our network accordingly. Well, when you put, you know, the entire office building, you know, everybody out, you've got to include, like I said, not only the bandwidth part of it, but also the monitoring and the quality assurance as well to make sure everyone's having a good experience. So those were changes that we had to make as part of the pandemic, but were changes that were, you know, already, you know, moving forward as part of, you know, mobility and already moving forward as part of the modernization projects. So it just kind of sped them along, but it also confirmed kind of the need for them, right? You know, when you're used to being in the office and you say, we're going to create, you know, cloud first, mobile, accessible, and secure, people are like, oh, well, what do you need to have mobility for? What do you need to have mobility for? You know, at any given time, most of us are here. Then the pandemic happens and they're like, oh, now I get the mobility part. So, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm not sure if, you know, you can never tell, but you know, I've worked for organizations, global organizations, where we've had pandemics. We had SARS and we had Ebola, and we've had to evacuate offices before. You know, it's a new phenomena for the United States for the most part. But, you know, those were all design principles that, you know, working in a global organization where people tend to travel and bring things back. Sometimes they bring back coffee, sometimes they bring back chocolate, and sometimes they bring back a virus, right? That gets people in the office sick. So we just need to make sure that we're building, you know, our technology and our systems for resiliency, not only for disaster recovery, but for operations with, you know, no people in the office. And this has been a good test of, like I said, what we've been doing in the past, but also where we're going. And the ability to scale up those remote services.
That's great. Well, I think we're getting to the end of our period here, Ed. A lot of interesting things happening at the IMF with regards to modernization and how you guys have been able to manage technology and staff and culture. I guess last thoughts from you about, you know, as you go forward, as the IMF goes forward with modernization efforts, kind of managing some of the cultural dynamics associated with going back to office. Also kind of looking forward to some of the things that might be changing, either from a technology or technical perspective, from a service perspective. What's the one thing that you think is the biggest challenge for the IMF, and given the things that we've talked about and maybe some of the things we haven't, what's your biggest challenge going forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, for any organization that's going through, you know, a transformation and a modernization and post-pandemic and new tools and technologies, new processes, it's change management and culture. You know, we've proved that we can work from home effectively, and I think going to a hybrid model, you know, is a good thing for the organization. The new tools and technologies will enhance the processes and procedures that we have and provide, you know, much more effective and efficient ways to do work, but also to access information and to be more efficient. But the culture has got to adopt it. You know, you've got to play better offense, right? If you've got better tools and technology and information, the question is, how do you leverage them to create better outputs for your members and for your stakeholders? And you know, no set of tools or technologies or hybrid work can motivate an organization to move in that direction. You know, it's got to be the culture moving in that direction, the leadership moving in that direction, and each individual understanding that it's really on them to utilize the tools, to utilize in the best way they can the hybrid workforce, and to use information, much more efficient information and accurate information, to create a better outcome. Because if we just say, you know, we've got a better way of creating, you know, the old work products, then all we've done is created a faster way to get to where we've always been. The reality is we've got a way to go way beyond what we've been delivering in the past by adding a lot more value with a lot more information and a lot more depth. We just have to have the culture that pushes in that direction. So I think we're positioned well. Like I said, we've got new tools and technologies coming. We've got a new workforce model that I think will be much better for staff and give them much more flexibility. And the next push will have to come from the culture. You know, the IMF staff saying, you know, I've got the tools I need. I've got the model I need. You know, let's go ahead and do better than we've done in the past. Let's go and make change better. Let's go and address some of the challenges that we've never been able to get. Now I've got the tools to actually solve those problems. Now, how do I exploit them? So that's going to be the next big push. And we've got an organization called the Office of Innovation and Change, who's working through the change management, working with IT and working with our stakeholders to continue to push the culture forward. We've got a management team and a leadership team that are very much behind the change and the push. So all the components are there. We just have to execute. And I think that'll be something that, like I said, we'll do well going forward. So like I said, I think the future is bright for the IMF. And like I said, I look forward to seeing how all this comes to be.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Ed. Great talking with you as always. And we'll be speaking with you very soon.
Great. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to know what you thought of this episode. You can write us an email at podcast@thehackitgroup.com. And if you like this episode, please share it. You can find the audio, helpful resources, and a transcript of each episode at podcast.thehackitgroup.com. You can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app so you never miss an episode. The Hackett Group is the global leader in defining and enabling world-class performance. Learn how we can assist with your improvement journey at www.thehackettgroup.com.